This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
I turn to you like a flower leaning toward the sun. I turn to you, 'cause you're the only one.
And when I fall down, I have to pick myself back up.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. I'm Michelle Barber, and you are listening to Stand Up Straight, where we aim to provide a vehicle for the straight and allied supporters to stand up for our GLPD&I communities, to encourage and create greater inclusion, share stories, give advice, create dialogue, or introduce a new way of thinking. But most importantly, we want to facilitate change towards greater acceptance of our rainbow families in all its shapes and sizes. So tonight, again, I hear you say, what's on the show? I am joined by a brother, a footballer, an ally, an inspiration, and an anti-homophobia campaigner. And I think I've made him blush a bit. Welcome, Brock McLean.
Cheers. Thank you for having me. It's the nicest thing anyone's ever said about me on a radio show.
I could actually have had a longer list, I think, than that.
That was too long for my liking, but thank you, yeah.
It's my pleasure. It's fact. It's true. Does that sort of thing embarrass you, that sort of thing?
No, I don't think it doesn't embarrass me, but I'm, you know, obviously, being in a team environment, being a football player, you do tend to shy away from, you know, more individual rewards and stuff like that. So every time someone sort of singles you out like that, it's not, you prefer it to be more about the team. But yeah, look, if it means getting the word out there, there more, then I'm happy to take that.
And I hadn't actually thought of it from that angle. And really, tonight's show is not about football as such anyway, but you may as well mention the team for any of those couple of people out there. Who do you play for, Brock?
Play for Carlton. So.
Okay, we haven't got the theme song. I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. We didn't hear it on the weekend, so.
I was going to mention that.
Might save it for next weekend.
So as I said, the show's not about football. It is about, it's about one person, you, and how you're making a difference in that space, you know, in sport and in football and even and beyond that. So some of the people listening out here in Joyland would know you from something that you did in January 2013 and then again this year in 2014. So what did you went to?
It all sort of started, my journey started being an ally years ago when my sister invited me out for dinner and, you know, sort of told me that she was gay, and I suppose that's where my journey started from. But last year, you know, I was scrolling through Twitter one day and I happened to see, I think someone might have retweeted it, which was a Jill Stark tweet talking about, you know, how I think she was talking about David Pocock and how he, you know, became an athlete ally and stood up, you know, he was an ally in sport for, you know, anti-homophobia and equality, and she sort of posed the question of, is there an AFL player out there who'd be willing to do the same? And I sort of sat back and thought and think, well, you know, I've been sort of wanting to get it out there for a while, but I never really had an avenue and I was unsure about, you know, how I could go about it and how I could put my name to something. And I thought, bang, this is the perfect time. And, you know, I didn't consult the club. I didn't tell the club, which they were probably a little bit dirty on. They probably had every right to be. But I thought, well, if this is going to happen, then I need to just do it. I'm not going to worry about telling anyone. I think the message that I was trying to get out there was more important than what the footy club thought at the time.
Do you think? And again, it's not about the club, but do you think they would have stopped you?
No, I don't think they would have. But I thought they might have tried to. You know, try and restrict me in what I could say, maybe, and stuff like that. And I just thought, well, this needs to be honest. It needs to be raw. Mm. It needs to be exactly what I feel. And I got it out there. And then Jill put me in touch with Jason Ball, who I still remain quite close with today. I consider him a good friend.
And it's amazing.
He got in touch with me and asked if I wanted to march alongside him and his teammates at the Pride March. And you know, I was honoured that he'd asked me. And I thought, yeah, why not? I was happy to do it. And my sister and her partner got to march in it for the first time.
Oh, wow.
So it was the first time for the family, and you know, that was a great experience for me. And
had you known about Pride March before?
I'd known about it because I'd lived in the area, and I'd never been down to it myself. I didn't think it was that big.
Yeah.
It actually felt like a bit of a rock star walking down the street and everyone sort of, you know, calling out your name and waving. And but I thought the turnout was just amazing.
It was phenomenal.
And I was, you know, sort of taken aback by it all. And you know, and rightly so too. You know, the support that the gay community need from straight people. I think, you know, it's one thing for a gay person to stand up for gay rights, but it holds so much more power and weight when a straight person stands up for a gay person. And you know, Dan Jackson came down and joined me, which was great. And you know, this year we had
two
more players, so at that rate, and in 3 or 4 years' time, we'll have a whole footy team.
Yes, we hopefully will. Had you even considered sort of roping in any of your other players or other even from other teams or anything? Was this just was it maybe more about you that particular year?
Not at the time. I probably wasn't comfortable trying to, you know, ask other players because it was only sort of put on me so quick. But I think next year I will try to endeavour to get some of my teammates down. And as tough as that may be, not because I wouldn't want to support the cause or anything like that, but it is a Sunday and players are very players very precious for their time, and you know, some of them could be hungover or something like that. But who knows?
They'd be deep into training.
I'm sure there'd be a few of my teammates who'd be happy to march with me next year and march with Jason. And you know, this year it was great. We had Athlete Ally put their name to a few banners, and the AFLPA were great in their support as well. So that's we marched under those banners with, as I said, Jaron Geary and Sam Gilbert from St Kilda, and myself and Dan Jackson again. And
with the guys from the St Kilda, but irrelevant which club, I suppose, did they approach you and say, can we join you, or was it, we just want to? Just wondering what the mindset.
Myself and Jason caught up a few times prior to the Pride March, and you know, as well as just, you know, catching up and seeing how each other were, we spoke about the Pride March and, you know, things that were coming up, the Midsummer Carnival and all that sort of stuff. And we got in touch with the PA, or Jason got in touch with the PA and said, listen, would you mind sending an email out to, you know, to players from other teams and say, you know, get a gauge and see if anyone else would be interested. And those two guys put their name up, and, you know, they said the same thing, you know, after it, the same thing that I said last year, was that, wow, that was absolutely amazing. And,
it
you know,
is,
the turnout was great. And said the feeling of just not even doing that much, you know, it's not like you're going above and beyond. You're walking in a march for an hour, and that little act means so much to so many different people. And
that's
I think that was the main thing they took out of. So in trying to persuade players to do it next year, you know, that's probably the main message to drive home, that is, listen, it's an hour and a half, 2 hours max out of your day, and that 2 hours can make a massive difference to a lot of people.
And I don't think, I think as allies, which we both are, I don't think you can, we cannot be vocal enough. And just by, as you say, all we do is walk up that street. That's literally, that's all we're doing. But the magnitude, I know that the pride that you get from marching, and then the pride in knowing what other people, how people view you as being an ally and representing the GLBTI community or being part of it, and showing that there's actually no issue, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing for anybody to be concerned about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, I had a few people last year, the first time that I marched, said to me, you know, that was the most amount of cameras we've ever seen at the Pride March. So, again, you know, something so little that that drew so much media attention, you know, for the right reasons too, that, you know, these gay people need to be celebrated because they've been, you know, outcast for so long, and it's about time we started recognising them as equals because they are equals.
Absolutely right. I'm just wondering if I can ask you just a couple of quick questions. So growing up, did you kind of have that a strong sense of justice in your family? Was that sort of how you were brought up with it's just right, I have to do what's right?
Yeah, we were always brought up, you know, to first and foremost, family was the most important thing to us. And, you know, no matter what was going on in your life, how down you were or what was going on, you always had your family there. So that was always honed into us early on. And the fact that, you know, you treat people how you want to be treated. If you want respect, you give respect. And that's something that I still a value and a thought and a sort of a way I go about life every day. It's something I hold very dear to me, and it's something that I try to instill in, you know, fellow family members or mates or just, you know, to anyone who wants to listen.
Do you realise by marching what a monumental thing it was that you did? Do you actually sit back and think, wow, that was the first AFL player to march? Do you realise that that was big? What you did?
Probably not at the time. I probably didn't think of it in that regard. I only thought of it as sort of supporting Jason, and you know, because he asked me. You know, I'd never met him before, but I could almost pick up his joy and how happy he was in the. It was a private message on Twitter because we didn't want to make it public because the story hadn't been announced yet, so we sort of wanted to keep it under wraps. But I could sense how excited and happy he was just through the messages. So I thought it meant a lot to him. But now looking back on it, you can sort of reflect a bit and realise that it was quite a momentous moment, and you know, it's something that I'm quite proud of.
Have you inspired any other players, do you think, to not necessarily march, but and we'll talk a little bit more about your anti-homophobia campaign and what you have done, but do you think you've inspired any other players? Have they said anything to you?
Yeah, look, I've had a lot of players, you know, tweet me, and you know, when I've caught up with them in person, have, you know, said we think it's really great with what you've done. And I think the Idaho campaign last year, where so many AFL players got behind that cause, I think that was really great. And not just any old names, you know, Joe Watson and Chris Judd and Drew Petrie, Joel Selwood, these types of players. And, you know, these are champions of the game. So for them to do it was just, as I said before, you know, something so little means a lot to so many people. But it just doesn't extend to AFL players as well. You know, I had someone stop me in the street this morning. And we had a chat for 5 or 10 minutes about the issue, and I just think it's great.
Right?
I just think it's great that more and more people are starting to, you know, to talk about the issue and get it out there. And because for so long it was such a taboo subject, and but you know, out of all the people that have given me feedback, 99% have been positive. There's only been the sort of minority that are just very ignorant or. Yeah, probably more so looking to get a rise out of me or something like that.
Yeah, and if you had anything on social media, I would gather that there's, you know, chatter.
A little bit, but the easiest way to flush those people out is you just retweet it, and, you know, people just go on to them, so they're either forced to shut down their Twitter account or they apologise and, you know, never say anything again.
Yeah. We're going to come back, and I'd like to have a little bit of a chat to you about your relationship with your sister a little bit, and... you are on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9 with Michelle and Brock. Be an ally. Talk it out. Educate yourself. Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. Hi, everyone. You are with Michelle on Joy 94.9. So I am joined by the lovely Brock McLean, and we're talking about how influential he is. He probably doesn't believe that, but I think he is. Groundbreaking in tackling homophobia in sport and probably in the rest of the community, I think. So one of the things in my research was that your sister had mentioned, Brock, that she was really sure about coming out to you and about you discussing her, and she was more concerned about you and your career, your future, than herself, and that really touched me.
Yeah, well, the first time I heard that was when we were doing the interview with Jill last year, and that sentence or answer in itself was very powerful, and it sort of made me sit back and think, well, if here it is coming from the horse's mouth that a gay person is worried about, not about how she would be treated, but how her sibling would be treated in the AFL. So that said to me right there that there obviously is an issue and that there was something that needs to be done about it. But I reassured Tuwali at the time that, you know, if anyone ever said to me anything to me, that they were neither a teammate nor a friend or anything like that. And I reassured her that no one had said anything, and each player that I did speak to about my sister, they had nothing but support and kind words. So it was never an issue with my teammates. But, you know, hearing Ali say that made me sit up and have a think a little bit.
That's huge. Was it kind of disturbing to hear that?
Yeah, it was a lot
of weight on your shoulder.
A little bit because, you know, the Ali should be happy just coming out. She shouldn't have to worry about how her brother should be treated by other people, let alone herself. So that was as I said, it hit me pretty hard, and it was quite a powerful answer, and it sprung me into action, and you know, trying to install change in the AFL and in terms of wider community.
Is it different to tackling homophobia in sport, do you think, to other areas? I know you're just going into a new education or job. You don't have to
career,
say where
career
anything.
Path,
career
yeah,
path,
career
yeah.
path, yeah.
So I'm just wondering, why is it so hard in sport? Do you think? Do you have an idea why?
It's a tough one. I think the common misconception in football is, you know, football's a tough man's game, and to play the game you've got to be hard. And when someone criticises someone for being soft or, you know, doesn't go hard at the ball, it's, you know, you're weak, such and such, and it's usually associated with the gay person, which is totally wrong. You look at Ian Roberts, who played NRL in the 90s, and, you know, he was the first guy to come out as a gay player in the NRL, and he was built like a brick door dunny, and you know, he wouldn't think twice about you know, giving you one of the chops if you called him that. So I think that's certainly a misconception out there that, you know, soft players are aligned with being gay, which is just totally irrelevant and totally untrue.
But I suppose one of the I've heard it mentioned somewhere about substituting the word homosexuality for sexism and racism, as in stamping them out. So I know there's huge, a lot of programs and education across the AFL and other sports about stamping out racism and sexism, but why couldn't it be treated in that same way? I'm wondering, could they not have the same programs, substitute that word?
I think it all comes under the one banner.
You
know,
it does.
Racism and homophobia come from the same ugly family of hate. So I think, you know, the AFL did some great things. Have done great things with racism. You know, back in the mid 1990s, there was a bit of an epidemic in the AFL, and, you know, we saw quite a few number of cases. You know, players get reported and suspended and have to go through racial vilification classes, and they've done a tremendous thing in stamping that out of the game. Now, homophobia has got to be the next challenge, or the next education program. It's all just got to fall under the one banner, because it's the same thing. You're judging racism, you're judging someone or treating someone differently based on their race. And
correct.
Homophobia is no different. It's just sexual. You're replacing sexuality with race.
Why is it's a rhetorical question. I don't understand why it's harder. It's almost like it's lower down on the ladder. Of the order of things?
And I think because there wasn't a gay player, there still hasn't been a gay player in the AFL, that probably it's not in the forefront of, you know, maybe some people at the AFL's mind. I don't know their way of thinking, but, you know, it was to see, I think it was quite powerful when you saw those players that were racially vilified, to see them, how they react. So when, if you know, there was no sort of, it's a bit of a tricky one, but I think, you know, the... I think they're going to be, the next couple of years, there will be, you know, some education programs put in place. I think Jason Ball went and spoke at the AFL players induction last year to the younger guys, and I think that's where you've really got to target.
I've actually got that. I was going to, do we focus on the younger kids that are coming through? Because I know, and I have a 20-year-old son, and growing up, he didn't. None of his friends even noticed that he was gay. They just didn't care. It's not on their radar. So do you approach? Do you target the younger ones so you get them when they're younger and they're not tarnished or whatever you call it? And is that where you target?
I think you've got to go right back to primary school and start, you know, having education classes there, because my mum's a school teacher. You see so many, and you know, she said she hears it in the schoolyard. You see it on social media sites and social media platforms. You know, kids probably don't even know why they're saying, "Oh, that's gay," or "You know, you're gay," or you know, something they're associating with it being uncool, and they probably don't know. Half of them probably wouldn't even know why. It's just a trend that they pick up on from hearing it from probably older kids and other people. So if you start educating kids when they're young and explain to them, you know, the power of words and what effect they can have on other people. And you know, I think that old saying, "Sticks and stones might break my bones, and names will never hurt me." Well, I think that's wrong in a lot of ways, because you know, there could be a young kid who, you know, is thinking about coming out with his sexuality, but he hears so many, you know, anti-homophobic language around him. He thinks, why would I? If they don't know I'm gay, but they're already saying bad things, with gay people. So I want to hide my sexuality because I don't want to be judged or hurt or thought of any less differently than straight people.
Mm. Do you go out and speak in any schools? I know you are an ambassador for Beyond Blue, and I know there was the Families Like Mine tool that was on their website that was to support family and friends of members of the GLBTI community. So do you actually go out and talk as well?
I haven't done so as much. It usually comes up in every time I do an interview through, you know, just for footy or anything like that, most of the time I do get asked about it. So try and promote the anti-homophobic message that way. Twitter, I'm an athlete ally, so I'm an ambassador for the...
How does that work
as an ally? So when the article came out last year, David Pocock, the Australian rugby player, got in touch with me, and he was already an ally through the program. Got me in touch with Hudson Taylor, who's the founder of the Athlete Ally, and he asked me if I'd, you know, like to come on board and be an ally, and I did. And that's just about, you know, promoting the message and the word of, you know, just acceptance in sport and you know, still competing at your hardest and trying your best while accepting others and for who they are and not discriminating against anyone.
Hmm. There's, I'm wondering whether you've been a go-to person then, in a sense, at either by your teammates or people at the club, because you're groundbreaking, which I think you are. Have you had people kind of come to you and say, how do we approach this? What do we do? Even if someone's got, you know, a gay family member or something, do you find you're a go-to?
I've had a few people talk to me about, you know, siblings and, you know, not so much difficulties with themselves. You know, they were quite accepting of their siblings coming out, but more so about their parents. They were sort of very old school and very old fashioned. And I think that one of the main reasons I wanted to be an ally and spokesperson, if you call it, was back when Ali, my sister, came out to me, I could see how worried and how nervous and how anxious she was. And you know, as I said before, we were always brought up to, you know, to believe that family was the most important thing, and no matter what you had in life, family would always be there for you, and it had always been a loving brother. And so it was a little bit concerning to me, or I wanted to know why she was so nervous in telling me. And I asked her, and she said, "Oh, you know, it wasn't about, you know, the family issue or anything like that." She said, "I had so many of my, but she plays basketball, so many of her basketball teammates, or she'd heard of a lot of stories about, you know, girls and guys coming out to their parents and being disowned and being abandoned." Said, "Well, we don't want anything to do with you anymore." So that was another really powerful message that she got home to me. So it was, I think, you know, that Families Like Mine initiative by Beyond Blue was great, because there probably are parents and siblings and family members that are out there who want to support and love their kids, but they're probably unsure of how to go about it. And don't quite know what to say, or they don't want to be, you know, they're unsure if that what they say might be have a detrimental effect on them or something
and
like
that's,
that.
And that's true, because it is it's a struggle for them to come out to start with, and I have heard this said a lot, that even though in their heart of hearts they might know they're not going to be rejected, there's still the fear that what if they are, and what would I do? So, and we as allies, we can't even possibly fathom what that's like, and that's why the gravity of what your sister said to you just strikes such a chord with me, that she was so terrified of what might happen to you. And this is what happens with a lot of people, I've no doubt. So that's why I wondered whether you're kind of like that agony aunt, or that, you know, that advice giver.
Yeah, I think it wasn't an issue to me at the time, and I think from you know, stories I've heard and you know, instances I've heard, was where the parents or the person that has been told that their son, brother, sister, whatever, have come out as gay, they've just sort of not laughed it off, but just hasn't treated it as an issue. Like, oh yeah, I've known for a while or whatever. Can you bring, you know, get me some milk on the way home or something like that? And it just, I was out for dinner with Ali, and all I said to her, I said, are you happy? And she said, yes. So that's all that matters. We had a drink. We had some more sushi. And that was it.
Life goes on.
Yeah, exactly. Life goes on. I hadn't thought, didn't think of her anything differently. I didn't try and make a massive deal out of it. We just, you know, just treated her as I did before I knew she was gay.
Mm. And you're spot on. And that's wise words, Brock. Mm. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more to Brock McLean. You are on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're listening to Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9. She's my mum.
Hi, everyone. You are with Michelle and Brock McLean, and I have revved up the listeners, and they have responded. We've gone international. We've had some Alistair, who is one of our newsreaders at Joy. He's languishing in Berlin, and he says, greetings from Berlin, enjoying the show. Great interview with Brock. As footy fans and Tigers members, it's great to know we have voices like Brock, Dan Jackson and Jason Ball in the game. Keep it up. So, yes, that is absolutely spot on. And from Paul, I love Brock's passion. He is to be commended for taking a stand. And, yes, that is true. Again,
well,
you're blushing.
Thanks for the emails, guys. It does mean a lot to me.
Yeah, it does. Do you get a lot of, you said somebody stopped you in the street. Do you get that a lot? And does it kind of, is that your reality check that, hey, I'm doing something good?
I think more, you know, I do speak to more and more people about it, you know, in the public, just random people I know, people on Twitter, social media, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I went to school with a guy who we were really close with, you know, through high school. We always sort of knew, and he only sort of came out a few years ago, and he's been in contact with me since. We sort of drifted apart when school's finished, but, you know, he was really wrapped and, you know, nothing but praise. And, yeah, so it does make you feel a little bit good about yourself, but I suppose the next step is getting more people on board and getting more AFL players out there and, you know, to spread the word. But not just AFL players, all types of people. You know, everyone's got a responsibility for stand up for what's right. And, you know, they might be a role model to their children at home, or nephews or nieces, or even just fellow mates or people in the workplace. So it's not just people in the spotlight's role to, you know, to stand up for what's right. Everyone in society has got a role to play in doing what's right. And that's, you know, the foundation of being a good human is treating everyone equally.
Yeah, outside of football, you've probably got a very good career in public speaking, I think, Rocky. But you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. It's even just the words that we use or not use, and also pulling other people up for saying and doing the right, you know, even if it's just saying, hey, you know, that's not cool, or something like that, you know?
Yeah, we call it deflecting leadership, you know, instead of relying on, you know, people who do take a stand in the field, leaving it up to them. If you see something, say something or do something about it. Don't just sit back and say nothing, because you're just as part of the problem as the person who's saying it.
Yeah, standing by and allowing it to happen.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago I had Daniel Whithouse in, who has written a book. He travelled around Australia for 266 days in rural and regional parts of Australia, tackling homophobia. And what the way he approaches it is, and he learnt this from his mum, like one cuppa at a time. It's basically, you know, if you're sitting down having a chat, and it kind of comes into the conversation. So how do you, is it kind of like a, you know, a sort of, it comes up in conversation occasionally, or do you raise it, or how do you get that conversation?
People usually get on the front foot and say, you know, good on you for what you're doing. We love what you're doing. Or if, you know, some people, you know, question me about it, you know, maybe on social media that, you know, why should you leave this sort of stuff out of football. And, you know, I try and talk them through from an empathetic point of view. I'm just thinking, well, imagine you've got a sister or brother or even yourself, and you've got to live this life your whole life and try not to, you know, try and fit in with with a crowd or not be judged just because you like the same sex. Like, how would that make you feel? Or imagine if you had a close mate who had to hide who he was for so long, even from his best mate. Mm. You think, how would that make you feel as a mate? And you sort of sit back and say, oh, yeah, you know, you're right. It's, you know... People that say that sort of stuff, you know, that don't bring politics into football and stuff like that. Well, it's not politics. It's, as I said before, it's a basic human right of treating people equally, and you're treating people how you want to be treated. And I think people need to stop, you know, mixing the two up.
They complicate things too much, do you reckon?
Exactly. Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah, that's true. You touched on, you'd had a little bit of negative feedback. Have you had anybody that's kind of told you, you know, stop what you're doing, it's not a big deal, don't try to downplay what you're doing or anything like that?
No one that I know, or no one's come up to
me. You're too chicken.
No one personally, anyway. You know, you do get a few, I suppose, idiots on Twitter who, as I said before, they try and get a rise out of you, or some of them are just so ignorant and so stupid that it's not even worth a reply. You know, some of the stuff they tweet you, they just think, you're either drunk or you're dropped on your head as a kid. It's ridiculous. But.
So have you seen massive changes in the 12 months that you've been, is that like from one pride march to another, I suppose, is a bit of a measuring tool. Have you seen a big change?
Yeah, not just in the football world, but in the wider community. I think there's more and more athletes signing up to be athlete allies. Like, for example, Alex Blackwell, who's a female Australian cricketer, I think. Yeah, cricketer. Mm-hmm. She's come on board. There's a lot more, you know, there's NBA players and NFL players signing up to be a part of it. And I think, you know, along with the marriage equality debate, you know, you're starting to just see more and more people talking about it. I think that's only going to be a good thing. And, you know, like, you know, the women voting, and you like the racial segregation and stuff like that, we'll look back on this era in 10 or 20 years' time and just think how stupid and,
yeah,
you know,
how
slow were we. And,
yeah, I agree.
But I think we've got to get to that point, you know, quicker rather than slower.
Yeah, I 100% agree. There was some talk in the media, I think it was last week maybe, where I think there was some talk about whether they thought players should or shouldn't come out or could, and how they'd be received and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think one of the comments from a journalist was that AFL crowds weren't ready for a gay player, and I think another comment from another AFL media personality was that you know, they'd be under not huge pressure, but I haven't actually heard the interview myself, but something along the lines that, you know, it'd be quite a burden for him to carry if AFL crowds were ready. I'm thinking, exactly. Like, that, surely that's no way near as worse as having to hide who you are for so long and being worried about, you know, how you'd be accepted in that terms. And I think if a player's ready, then that's all that matters. If he's ready to come out, then that's what we should be celebrating. We shouldn't be talking about whether the crowds are ready or anything like that. He shouldn't have to worry about that. If he's ready to come out, then he should have the support of everyone around him.
I agree. And we, instead of it being the negative direction that people are taking, why not see that person as being groundbreaking or brave, and celebrating them and praising them for what they would have done, you know?
And I think you've just got to look at examples like Robbie Rogers, who's a soccer player from England, who retired first because he was worried about how his career would be sort of threatened or received after that, and came out, nothing but love, nothing but support. Correct. He's having a successful career in the MLS now. You look at Michael Sam, who's a fourth-year college player, just out of college, entering in the NFL draft this year, came out as gay. Now, there are certain whispers behind closed doors and from anonymous people, you know, in the NFL ranks, saying, you know, oh, it's going to affect him and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, he's received nothing but, you know, public support, and, you know, so many people have commended him and, you know, commended his courage, and rightly so. But, you know, it really shirks me when you hear of anonymous people come out and say, you know, he's going to be treated differently or anything like that. If you're going to come out and say something, be a man and put your face behind your word. Don't hide behind, you know, being anonymous, or you're saying, oh, you know, if I give you this quote, you can't give details on who I am. Don't be a, yeah.
We've fired you up a little bit.
Just think, if you're gonna say something, you be a man and you put your name to it. You don't hide behind anonymity.
I absolutely agree. We're gonna go for a very, very quick break. You can have a breather, Brock, for a second, and we'll come back. You're on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9 with Michelle and Brock.
Did you beep that out, the word sex? I hope so.
Parents in the room.
I wanted to shock my mother.
Oh, he's getting all hot and flustered. I hope Grandma's not listening.
Oh, Grandma.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Hi, you are with Michelle and Brock, and we are talking about how we could possibly stamp out homophobia in football first and then in life second. Would we ever stamp it out, do you think?
I think you're never going to stamp it out completely, but I think it'll get to a stage where the very minute of people that are homophobic and continue to use homophobic language will be outcast and be made to feel like they're the sort of minority in society, which they will be.
Yeah, and something I've noticed probably last year in particular, when I've gone to the football, and if somebody swears, even if it's just SH or whatever, everyone turns around, and it's like they all get eyes on them and daggers, and it's like the crowd judges them, the mass judges them, and you can't get away with it. And I don't hear racial slur. I just don't hear it even in the crowd
anymore.
And
that's the way it should be. Everyone, you know, as I spoke about before, everyone taking ownership of the issue. And I think today's generation can really lead the way in sort of educating older people, because usually older people that I have the most issues with on social media, because they come from a era where, you know, that being gay was like just absolutely outcast, and you were something completely different if you were gay, where today's generation of kids seem to be so much more accepting and so much more open to ideas. So they can really lead the way in terms of, you know, teaching their parents or their grandparents. Correct. Or uncles, aunties, and as I said before, really owning leadership on the issue. And, you know, if they hear someone say something, then do something about it.
And I suppose then that's you target the younger ones in the clubs that are coming through, as we said before, as well, and that maybe that's where you start. I don't know how to run a club, but that's, you know, maybe that first point, that first area to start with, because they don't care.
Yeah,
they just don't.
Exactly.
You know?
if they're a mate, and they're like, well, who cares? Yeah. He's gay, so, likes boys, so what? Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
He's still a mate.
Can he kick?
He hasn't changed. Yeah. Can he win me a game of footy?
That's the question. Okay, we've had another message in from Sammy of a Reservoir. Most fabulous interview, Michelle. You are an inspiration. Brock is such an amazing and articulate ally for the entire rainbow community and a true representative for our national sports. Sammy, lots of kisses.
Thank you, Sammy. I'm blushing again.
You're going to have a record blushing evening. So, do you have any short, medium and long-term goals for how you might want to tackle homophobia?
Yeah, I was approached by a second cousin of mine. I think it's my dad's cousin. I'm not sure. Second, third, fourth cousin. I don't know really how all that all works. I'll just say cousin. But she sent me a text message last year asking me if I'd be willing to talk at I think it was a friend of her's daughter's school. I think they were high school kids, maybe. And at the time, I was quite heavy into my study, so I never really had the time to do it. So that was something I really wanted to do, but I just didn't have the opportunity to do it. So I think I might get in touch with that cousin again this year and, you know, maybe start talking to schools or, you know, doing more talks like that, maybe going to football clubs or stuff like that and trying to spread the message in that way. You know, as you said before, educating younger kids and educating whole football clubs, you know, about the issue, because the chances are a lot of people at those football clubs will know someone that's gay. And,
of course.
And will know what sort of effects that homophobic language and actions can have on people, on gay people.
Yeah, but then also not just gay, but it's us. I know how disturbed I have been when I've had heard that somebody's not been kind to my son. So I mean, it does hurt us as well.
Yeah, I think I get really upset, and I suppose sort of it breaks your heart when you hear stories of, you know, kids being so bullied so hard at school or anything like that. They're forced to take their own lives, and I think you know that's. One of the most heartbreaking stats you'll ever think is that gay teens or gay people, I think it's 6 times more likely to commit suicide. And that's saying something right there. So something's got to be done about that.
And it's now.
Yeah, exactly.
We have to do it. Yeah. Do you think that you are a better, stronger and more confident and comfortable man now?
I think I've always been confident in who I am and always been a big believer in, you know, my values and what I hold dear to me. I think I've grown a lot more as a person, and I think that's also part of maturing and growing up. But, you know, just realising that help by doing something that, you know, doesn't seem a lot to me, you know, as I said before, about walking down the street or just going out and talking about, you know, equality and stuff like that, what sort of difference that can make on people, and just realising the power of little things that straight people can do that can make such a difference for the gay community. I think that's the biggest thing I've realised.
Yeah, and do you think you've found a little... this is a cliche, I know. But do you think you've found a bit of a calling?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah,
definitely. You know, as you... As you get older, as I said, you mature a little bit more. The passions in your life might change a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've got plans post footy to get into finance and set myself up with a good career there. But, you know, if I'm able to do that, then yeah, maybe helping other people in, you know, less fortunate situations, or you know, being a spokesperson for the gay community. Who knows? That definitely is a goal of mine.
Yeah, well, I think we already own you as part of the GLBTI community. And I know myself as an ally, I consider it an honour, and I'm very card-carrying, and I would think that you would probably feel the same way. So I think similar in that sense.
Definitely.
I would like to refer people to, there's a notahomophobia.com.au if people want to have a look at that website. And there's also the Beyond Blue Families Like Mine that we touched on, that resource for family, friends and others of GLBTI community people.
There's also Athlete Ally, who I'm I've lost
ambassador?
My train of thought.
Ambassador,
I was looking for. Sorry. An ambassador for, and, you know, you can jump on their website. I know they do clothes and merchandise and stuff like that and stickers. So if you want to actually get your message out there that you're, you know, an ally for gay people, then go on the website and buy some of their stuff.
We will do. Want to thank you very much, Brock. You've been sensational. I'm not nervous anymore. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. I would like to let everyone know what your weekly challenge is after the Spirit Lounge. Spirit Lounge is on after me. What will you do this week to stimulate dialogue, create change, or encourage involvement? You have been listening to Michelle Barber on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Up Straight has a podcast, so check it out at the Joy website, joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.